Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today as we visit with a couple of guests who are hosts of PBS Wisconsin's show, Let's Grow Stuff. They are Quantes Winters, an urban gardener and herbalist. Quantes, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you, Larry.
It's good to see your smiling face. And it's also good to see the smiling face of Ben Fuda, the former garden director at Allen Centennial Gardens in Madison. Now, he's now the CEO and founder of the company Botany. It's a business in South Bend, Indiana. Ben, welcome back.
Thanks. It is great to be with you.
Great to have you here. So maybe you've watched, as you listen to these two experts talk, maybe you've watched some of the Let's Grow Stuff programs. What did you think? What topics would you like to hear about maybe on that show? What questions do you have about gardening? All kinds of things we can talk about today. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Ben, you haven't been with us for a while. Tell us about your new business.
Oh, it has been a never a dull moment, as we like to say. You know, we, of course, moved back home here to Indiana in late 2020. And after sort of poking around for a little bit to try and figure out what we were going to do next, we Madison has so many amazing plant shops and nurseries. We were quite spoiled. It was a wonderful place to be. We moved back to here to Indiana, and not to say there aren't some incredible places, but we were really looking for that. We used to make a Saturday of going around to all the different plant shops in Madison, and we just hadn't really found that place here when we moved back. And so we landed on this idea of, well, maybe we're opening a plant shop when we grow up, and we're just about to approach our 1 year anniversary of being open. And it's been a wild, awesome ride ever since. But we're in fourth winter today. I think of the Midwest season. We woke up to more snow and lake effect. So we're just kind of like gritting our teeth, but I know it'll end. So
it'll end. It will indeed. And what do you see for the future of a Botany?
Well, actually, I sort of joke, but I'm also very serious when I say, we're actually, I've worked in public gardens my whole life. They're near and dear to my heart, and they're sort of really part of my DNA. And as people ask that question, I say, really, we're building a public garden in the neighborhood. We just started with the gift shop first. We have some exciting ideas. We're doing a lot of work in community beautification in our neighborhood. We're, recruiting neighbors and volunteers to help us do the work. So we really are trying to sort of think about our whole neighborhood as a garden rather than a garden being sort of confined to one plot of land. So
that is a cool
idea. Parking lot, every median, every public park, any green space, urban farm, community garden is sort of a part of this bigger whole. So that's and that's where we're going. Of course, there's a lot of work to do, and we're just getting started. But it's a fun place to be.
Well, it sounds really cool. Quantes, let's talk about you for a bit. Give us your background a little bit, and how'd you get involved in gardening?
Yes. So how did I start? That's a wonderful question. Honestly, it all started when I was trying to do a deeper dive into my culture. My grandfather passed away when I was around 13. And a few years after he passed away, I found out that he was Gullah Geechee. And for those who don't know, Gullah Geechee individuals are people who came here from West Africa due to the transatlantic slave trade. And they were specific to the Sea Islands of the Carolinas. What made them so unique from other people who also came from Africa during that slave trade was that they got to spend a lot of time alone. And that allowed them to build their own unique culture that basically came from their African culture that they brought and also the indigenous peoples that lived in those areas. During my research of just trying to dig more into this culture and figure out how I could just make it a part of who I was as an individual, I was able to draw a lot of connections to nature and how knowledge of the land, knowledge of how to grow food and how to use it for medicine, clothing, art, etc. It it was like it's a part of our history. That was a surprise to me because growing up, I kind of grew under the stereotype that I just don't have a place when it comes to nature, that farming is not for me to do, growing food is like not connected to my culture. And through doing this research, I found out that like literally knowledge of the land is why I'm here today, because my ancestors knew how to take care of themselves and knew how to navigate the land and nature, I'm able to be here. So after finding that out, I kind of just like went on this journey of trying to learn as much as I could about how to grow food. And I started with herbalism, and that kind of just started with me walking through wooded areas. And I used this app that you like can take pictures of plants, and then it tells you what the plant is. So I would like walk through the woods, I'd see a plant that was interesting to me, take a picture of it, and then I would go home and just study it until there is nothing else to learn about it. And then I figure out how to use it. And then after I like kind of got my footing with herbalism and learned more about how to like forage things, I decided it was time for me to learn more about how to grow my own food, because that was important for me to know. So I actually started the Troy Farms farmer trainee program, and that was in, I believe, 2019. And through that program, I was able to get hands-on experience with farming and learning how to grow food. Larry, it literally blew my mind. I was amazed at like how you can start things from seed and then they turn into like these beautiful flowers, and then the flowers turn into fruit, and then you eat it, and it's just like, oh, it's a whole nother experience. So that's like, that was basically my journey. I was just trying to learn more about myself, and then I was like, oh my goodness, I'm discovering something here. Like, this is me. I have a place here. So yeah, that's how it all started.
And you're connected with Troy Gardens and have some experience definitely with, and for those who aren't familiar with Troy Gardens, talk about what it is.
Yeah. So Troy Gardens it encompasses two things. So there's a farm, and the farm provides foods for Woolley Street Co-op. We provide food for Hy-Vee. And then we also have our Thursday and Sunday farmers markets, which allows us to provide food for individuals who have bought food shares with us, and also just regular patrons who are walking down the street and they see these beautiful farm stands and want to come and buy food. But there's also a garden plot in the front for the community. And you can sign up for this garden plot and grow your own food. We also have partnered with certain farmers who use their garden plots to actually sell their own vegetables as well. So I would describe Troy Gardens as a community oasis, to be honest. It's a place for everyone to discover their relationship with the land and to build that connection with food, and to also gain skills. We offer volunteering so that people who don't have the time to do the farmer training program, they can just come and learn how to grow food on a larger scale and also get the education that they need to be able to take these things home and do it on their own. And then, you know, like I mentioned, they also provide the farmer trainee program. It's a job, you get paid for it. It's available from, I believe it opens up May to October are the times where you can be a part of that program. And it's just like, it's a wonderful experience. It really is.
And there's some education programs for children too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, there are. Yep, we have. I actually worked with the Kids Garden for a little bit. So we have our the Children's Garden Education Group, and we partner with different community centers around Madison, and they bring their kids, and the number of kids in the group can range from a small group of like 5 kids, and then sometimes there are like up to 15 kids. It ranges. We also have kids there range from ages like 5 and up, It typically, from my experience, has stopped at like around 12. And what we do is we just lead these activities for the children that center around garden work. So they learn about pests. They learn about how to take care of plants. They learn how to properly water plants. They help us with daily tasks like creating pathways, harvesting food. But we also teach them really awesome recipes that they're able to make with the food that they have helped us to grow. It's beautiful. One of my favorite activities that I've ever done was when we got to draw our dream gardens with some kindergarten age children. And it was so beautiful to see their imaginations. And I really was able to come from that experience, being willing to open my own mind a little bit more when it came to it. Because I remember when I first started out with them, I'd be like, well, you know, that's not really possible because you can't grow this in a shaded area. So you might want to move, you know, the sunflowers to this side of your garden. And then I was just like, you know what, forget it. Like, let their imaginations flow. And that kind of helped me in creating my own garden. Yeah, kids are awesome.
Oh, man. Quantee's Winners and Ben Fuda with us today. And we haven't talked about much about Let's Grow Stuff, which I really like a lot, as a matter of fact, because I think it's, well, for a lot of reasons. And Ben, you were the first host of Let's Grow Stuff. How'd you get involved and kind of what kinds of things are we looking at?
Well, it was, early 2020, I think around April, probably. So right after, you know, we were still in full lockdown. The world was still, everything was slow. Everything was on pause. And someone from PBS Wisconsin reached out to me and said, hey, so we're noticing that everybody's gardening. all of a sudden, everybody's gardening, you know, seeds are selling out. And we're realizing that we'd really like to produce some fresh content in the garden realm. Would you be interested in being a part of this? And, you know, after thinking for maybe half a second, I was like, yes, let's do this. I sort of say that, like, you know, I was raised on the Victory Garden on PBS. Like, that was my Saturday morning. I've been craving so very deeply that level of, like, that return to PBS of like that show. And so, you know, while we're certainly not doing a half hour or hour format, I sort of joke and like, this legacy is safe in my hands. You know, like, I get on Victory Garden. This feels so great. And so the first year was really thinking about trying to follow along with where the show is really sort of built for pandemic gardeners. You know, these people who've never dug in before, who've never planted a seed, never harvested. And so the episodes are pretty short, 3 to 5 minutes. We try and focus on really practical of the moment topics. So, you know, as August and September rolled around, how do you harvest kale? If no one's ever harvested kale, like, how do you do it? You know, like, how to get rid of grass fast if you're trying to grow this year. Just how can you, you know, put something in the ground and grow without building a raised bed and getting it, you know, to mixing. So how can you do this in a sort of a quick and cost-effective way? And then the second season, we sort of started to, you know, expand on that, of course, a little bit, and think, okay, now these gardeners are with us into season two. This is your second year growing. What might you be finding in the second year? Maybe we can go into some slightly more complex topics. So the show has sort of evolved, I think, with how the pandemic mindset has also evolved in terms of how we relate to our outdoor space, how we relate to gardening. And I'm super thrilled to have Quantis here this year because, again, she brings this amazing expertise in growing food that, you know, quite frankly, I hit a ceiling. my background is in those, you know, native plants and planting design and herbaceous perennials. That is sort of my heart and soul. And so Quantis is bringing a wonderful new perspective to it. So I'm so thrilled to have her here. And we're already doing things in season three. We've got episodes outlined. Things are going to start moving and grooving here as soon as fourth winter's over. The magic will start to happen. So we're excited.
We are talking with a couple of guests, Quantis Winners and Ben Fuda. They are the hosts of PBS Wisconsin's show Let's Grow Stuff. And I'll give you a chance to join in. Questions for them, maybe about the show, or maybe you just have some plant questions that you want to ask about, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Dodeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mehler with my two guests on the show today, Ben Fuda, who is CEO and founder of Botany. It's an outlet to explore creative concepts related to the culture in horticulture. And he's host of co-host of Let's Grow Stuff on PBS Wisconsin. Quantes Winters is the other host. She is an urban gardener, an herbalist. And so we'll talk with them, or we're talking with them about the show itself, but also taking your questions, maybe about the show, maybe about some plants, or maybe about some gardening questions that you have. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Quantes, what kinds of trends are we seeing in gardening today from your perspective?
Well, you know, from my perspective, I haven't noticed much as far as trends, but I can tell you about some of the trends that I am expecting myself to do this year. One of those things is that I'm really interested in companion gardening. It's one of those things that when we were on the farm, we experimented with it a little bit just to get more pollinators to come and help us with our peppers. So we planted marigolds between some of our jalapeno peppers and I believe our shishito peppers as well, just to help them, you know, fully flower and do what they needed to do. So I'm really excited to try that this year, but I want to not necessarily do it with the flowers. I want to try it with herbs, specifically for my tomatoes, because when I grew them last season, I was also in the midst of doing a little bit of an experiment as far as letting my weeds go, because I just wanted to see. I'm one of those people where it's like, people will say, hey, this is, you shouldn't do this. These are the reasons why. And I just have to prove it. So I noticed that in the areas where my sage was growing with my kale, they went perfectly fine. Nothing was going wrong. And from that experience, I was like, oh, I wonder if I can do this thing where I'm growing herbs next to plants and it actually helps them to grow better. So I did a little bit of research, and apparently things like basil, parsley, and there's another one, but I'm blanking on it right now. They actually help tomatoes to grow better and help to deal with certain pests that typically attack tomato plants, like the infamous hornworm. On all the garden Facebook groups that I'm on, that worm is everywhere. So I'm really excited to try that and delve into that a little bit more and, you know, be a student teacher along with our viewers and, you know, my fellow gardeners to see if this is something that we can keep in our gardens for years to come. Another thing also I would say that I've noticed a lot more of us are doing is paying more attention to pollinators and dedicating spaces in our gardens for, you know, plants that, you know, attract bees, attract hummingbirds, butterflies, and other type of pollinators. So I've been noticing that a little bit more. I did see it when I was in Troy's community garden, that there were areas that people were dedicating just to planting flowers, like, you know, people planting things like bee balm. There are some other ones, I'm blanking on those as well. But yeah, those are two things that I have been noticing. People just trying to be a little bit more organic about how they're dealing with pest control and how they're dealing with the health and vitality of their plants, but also just paying more attention to the fact that we need pollinators and giving them a little bit of something for all the hard work that they're doing to help us have these beautiful gardens.
Oh, there you go. Well, Alec in Portage has a question for you, so let's go there. Alec, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, thanks for taking my call. A couple of questions. I've just purchased one of these raised beds, 2 feet by 8 feet, which I want to put out into my backyard. There's nowhere that gets sun all day long, so there's some areas which get it in the morning, some which get it in the afternoon. So my first question is, where would be the best place to put it? And secondly, what should I plant in there to get the best results in a 2x8 bed? Preferably things that I can eat.
Yeah, of course. So a 2x8, so that's a relatively small raised bed for vegetables, perhaps. Quantes, what do you think?
Well, for the first question of where you should plant it, I would suggest before you like find your place to place your raised bed, maybe just take a look, you know, at certain spots of your home, like, or your land, and see what areas are getting the most sun. You want to like focus on a place that gets like at least 6 hours of sun a day. So try to focus on that. I know it's like really hard to, you know, be patient and take your time, but it will do you some justice if you kind of just scope out your land first before you go ahead and place it and just see, okay, this is the area that's getting the most amount of sun, go there. You don't have to have, you know, sun all day long. You just need, you know, 6 hours max is what you need, you know, for your vegetables and fruit to do what they need to do. As far as what things you would plant in it, what things you should plant in it, if I were in your shoes, I would go for things that don't have like really deep root systems. Maybe you want to try certain type of herbs, or I don't think onions have very deep root systems from my experience with them. That's something that you could try as well. Also think about things when they're in their like their full grown stage. Maybe don't go for things that grow out. So I wouldn't do collard greens unless that's all you were growing in there. So yeah, I hope that answered your question, Alex.
Tomatoes, yeah, tomatoes would take up quite a bit of space too.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, if you put one tomato plant in there, sort of at the end, maybe you could get. I wouldn't put more than one in a two by eight for sure. And then, Alec, are we answering your question? Or did you have an additional question?
Yeah, my thought was tomatoes, peppers, and onions. So from the sound of it, you're saying maybe just one tomato plant.
And some peppers and onions.
Yeah.
That's probably not a bad idea. Peppers don't take up a ton of space, so you could have a few pepper plants in there for sure. And if you wanted to, you could probably have some kind of squash or that you could plant and then let it come out of the bed and sort of right along the side of the bed, or trellis it up, which is maybe on the other end. You have the squash if you want to put it in, and you trellis the plant up the trellis.
Mm-hmm.
I am doing some talking here, but at least Ben and Quantes are nodding in agreement with me. So
I agree with you, Larry.
So I think you're okay with those three. It's a good thing to start with, and then see what happens. And maybe next year you add another 2x8. And then in terms of the soil, what were you planning to put in there for soil, Alec?
And that was my next question. I don't know. So any help?
Yeah, any help in that area. Okay, well, go ahead, Ben and Quantes.
So for raised bed soil, in my experience, I would avoid using something that, if you're shopping at, you know, the garden center, avoid buying things that say like potting mix or container mixes. Like those are really for if you're growing in, say, like a small ceramic container or doing a patio garden. You know, raised beds almost, I would look for things. There might be some garden centers that actually have something that say like raised bed mix, possibly. That's probably going to be a bit heavier, holds onto water better, higher organic content. You know, the potting soil we like to avoid only because it's typically higher in peat moss, which first of all is a non-renewable resource, not a super great thing for us to use in our gardens. Finding alternates is good. But also it's meant to drain pretty well. You know, it again, it's meant for those smaller containers. It's not really meant to fill a raised bed. So look for something that's actually sort of listed as a raised bed soil. You could do, if you're able to find just sort of straight compost, you know, that's one alternative as well, but also sort of bear in mind with that, that it could almost like overcharge things or supercharge, you know, certain things to the point where it's almost too much of a good thing. You know, like it wouldn't do, for instance, if you find, you know, decomposed horse manure or cow manure or something. I mean, these veggies are going to like take, it's going to be a little shop of horrors. They'll take over your house. So, you know, something that, you know, if this is going into a space in your yard, if you have extra soil, you're digging up from someplace else, you could certainly use that, but then incorporate some organic material, because of course veggies like nutrients. They really want as much food as they can get. Quantice, do you have any other experience with like raised bed specific soils?
No, I've actually only grown in ground, but I think you did a really great job, Ben. You made a lot of really great points, especially about the not using potting mix, because I feel like that's a easy mistake that a lot of us make. We just think, oh, I need some dirt. Let me go get some dirt.
not all dirt is the same, yes.
Exactly.
Alec, does that help?
It does. Thank you very much for those suggestions. We'll give it a whirl and see how we get on.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. So, you know, your Let's Grow Stuff, that show, or those a series of shows, I've had a chance to look at many of them, and what I like about them is their, let's take the one feature you have on pruning dogwood and hydrangeas, for example. We see the dogwood, we see the hydrangeas, you have very good visuals, and this is not a long sequence, I mean, it's fairly short, but you get a very good opportunity to visually look at the dogwood and the hydrangeas, and then just how to go about pruning them. And it's sometimes it's better than just reading about it on a page, yeah. Ben.
Yeah, and that's something that we sort of, you know, the PBS team and felt really strongly about from the beginning, is that we don't want these to be 20, 30, 45 minute videos that you have to sort of like sit down and take notes and rewind. And, you know, we're not going for masterclass here. We're going for sort of like, let's answer these questions. You know, Larry, for all the years I've been on Garden Talk with you, you know, I think almost every time there's been a question about how do I prune a lilac or a hydrangea, you know, at some point in the year, seems to sort of be the perennial question. And, you know, so we thought, well, why don't we do an episode really, you know, it is certainly a show and tell moment. And of course, you know, the other thing I have to restrain myself from is I want to share everything about every hydrangea there ever has been, you know, so I could easily make it a half an hour segment, but, you know, PBS is really good at sort of editing me down to say like, let's focus right, you know, on this. And, you know, I also want to give, you know, super credit to their team as well, because the visuals are all them. I mean, they're so phenomenal at sort of, you know, and especially the team, you know, there's some of us that are gardeners or some of us that are new gardeners. And so the new gardeners are sort of saying, wait, go back. I don't know what that meant. Or what does it mean to say prune at this bud or you know, something like that. So they can sort of keep us in check a little of, you know, really representing the audience we're trying to speak to in terms of, again, folks that have never had to deal with this before. You know, in the case of, and we really try and also focus on things that are very visual, that really need to see how it's done, you know, rather than just doing a video of like, here's 10 things to do for spring, like a list, you know, those are things. We have a blog as well on that Let's Grow Stuff website, pbswisconsin.org/letsgrowstuff. And the blog is sort of where we'll do more of those sort of just like information delivery, or, you know, here's some things to keep in mind when you're ordering your seeds or something like that, like more list formats. But the videos, we really want to lean into them being hands-on, visual. You know, last year, our final one of the year was girdling roots. And that's one that I like, it's an epidemic. More people talk about girdling roots more often, you know, it's like, you know, for the health of our trees and our urban canopy, you know, girdling. And I said, can we just please do an episode, like a PSA of just, you know, here's what to look for, because to explain it to somebody, is tricky versus saying, here's what it looks like. Here's the signs. Here's how to identify it. Here's how to diagnose it. And then, you know, sort of the end, and that's really all we're trying to do in those episodes. And then we say, you know, if you want to do more, if you see this, call an arborist. Here's where you go next for your, you know, but yeah, we don't want people to have to take out the notebook and scribble frantically or rewind. We want you to be able to watch it and say, I picked up a new skill. I feel more confident. Let's break out the pruners and let's go to town.
Yeah, I really like that girdling one because of the you see it. And to describe it, it's... For a lot of things, it's kind of just better to be able to see it. Well, you describe it a bit too, but to actually see it, and man, as I drive around, I see a lot of
it's everywhere. It's just everywhere.
So sad. It makes my heart sad.
Yes.
When I look at those mistakes that have been made. Well, lots of callers online. We should take Brian. Let's go to you in Iron Mountain, Michigan. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a couple of questions. So I'm from the South, live up there now. We gardened last year, and I really had a hard time getting started. So I'm looking for some advice on what signs tell me to start prepping the garden. And then a second question is, we had a terrible problem with potato bugs last year, so it was looking for some help on controlling them.
And what zone? I'm trying to think of what's the zone. Do you know the growing zone for Iron Mountain, Michigan, Brian?
I think it's zone 4.
Okay.
I'm guessing at that, though.
Yeah. It could well be. It'd be worth a look to get. But Quantes, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's actually what I was going to say, Brian, is that for me, knowing when I need to be starting my seeds, when it's okay to start planting my starters into the ground, has been contingent off of my knowledge of the zone that I'm in. When I didn't understand the zone that I was in and like how to make things work in that zone, that's when I usually came up with a lot of problems. So honestly, I think the best place to start is just going to Google and looking up your zone. There is a breakdown. So like, you know, there's like, you know, the zones, you know, zone 5, you know, so on and so forth, but they're like broken down into subcategories. So here we have like zone A and zone B. So just find out what your zone is and if you're in a subcategory, and then figure out what are the growing seasons for your zone, and also what vegetables you can be growing in that zone.
And you might get some help as well from Michigan Extension Service, the horticulture agents. I believe Michigan has horticulture agents as well. And that would be, you know, you get a local agent, they could be helpful. The other thing you might want to do is take a soil test. And Ben, you're nodding too in agreement there.
Yeah, and something else I would add on as well is when you do find your growing zone, usually that's tied into your frost-free date. And so that's sort of like your key date to sort of work backwards from. So to Quantisa's point of knowing when to start and when to start either growing things inside or when it's safe to plant outside, you know, as your zone changes, your frost-free freeze date is going to change as well. So that's sort of your all clear moment. And so if you're reading a seed pack and it says, you know, start indoors 6 weeks before last frost, just, you know, look at a calendar. Okay, let's say my frost free date's May 15th, go 6 weeks back. We're looking at today, April 1st. So that's basically sort of a little bit of back casting. And the other piece too is to your zone information should tell you approximately how long your growing season is. So again, when the freezes come in the fall. So if you're gonna freeze a bit earlier because you're a bit further north, you know, it might tell you, okay, you have 120 growing days, you know, or something like that available to you in the season between those frost-free dates. And again, a lot of seed packets will tell you 90 days to maturity, 30 days to maturity, so on and so forth, so that you know, and you can sort of, not only do you know when to start things indoors, but you'll know, you know, if there's something that just really takes a long time to mature, you know, if it's a 180 day squash or something, you know, really unique, just don't even worry, don't bother planting it. Because if you don't have the time in the window to get it in, it's just going to let you down. So the timing of those frost-free dates and then days to maturity are probably the two other things to look to sort of based on your zone.
Good luck, Brian. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tom in Windsor will give you a chance. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning. I think, it's still morning. Bell peppers. Whenever I try to grow bell peppers, it seems like maybe I get one, and they seem to take forever, and they don't always get that big. What am I doing wrong?
So when do you plant them, or when do you put the plants in the ground?
I usually buy plants, and Mother's Day maybe, or later.
Yeah, later is much better for peppers. Quantiz, go ahead.
Yeah, I was also going to say, when I was working at the farm, something that we did in order to produce more peppers was, if you're going to notice that you're going to start seeing some of the peppers start to come through, those first peppers that come through, take them off. Pluck those off, because that actually will allow your plant to put more of its energy into producing like bigger, better peppers. This is a practice that I, noticed on the farm. It shocked me at first. I'm not going to lie, because I'm like, why are we doing this? But honestly, it's going to create more bell peppers for you. So once you notice those first peppers coming through, just pluck them off, and hopefully you'll start to see that your plant is, getting bigger and producing more bell peppers that are better quality.
And I always had trouble with peppers because I was too eager to get them in the ground. And I have to just strain myself not to put them in, because if you get any kind of a little cold snap, and you're in you're Windsor, which is near Madison, I wait to the end of the month, end of May, before I'm putting my peppers in the ground. And don't worry, you're still going to get plenty of peppers. But you may not get any if you plant them, too early. And Mother's Day is really early for peppers, as far as I'm concerned, in this part of the state. And it certainly would be for any part of the state. Frankly, there's maybe right 50 miles south of Madison or something you can do it. But resist the urge to put them in the ground until you're sure you're not going to get anything cold that's going to kill the flowers, especially in peppers. Anyway, that's my experience, Tom, and I'm sticking with it. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, you can trade in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Shanette and Merrill's going to be talking with us in just a second. She's got a question from Merrill, Wisconsin. But first, let me remind you, our guests today, Quantiz Winters and Ben Fuda from the PBS Wisconsin show, Let's Grow Stuff. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guests from the PBS Wisconsin show, Let's Grow Stuff. Quantiz Winters and Ben Fuda are the hosts. Questions for them about your gardening. I hope you'll join us at maybe about the show, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. And I hope you take a look at Let's Grow Stuff. In fact, we'll put up, or I think we already have a link on today's show, ideas@wpr.org/Larry. Go to today's program. You know the ropes. If you listen to the show, go there and you'll get a link to it. But Ben, give us the link anyway.
Yeah, pbswisconsin.org/Let's Grow Stuff.
Yeah, it's very easy. pbswisconsin.org/Let's Grow Stuff. All right. Shanette and Merrill, it's your turn. Hi, Shanette.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually from Madison, working in Merrill, Wisconsin today. But my question is, for people who are just starting out and we're urban apartment dwellers, we don't have a backyard or a garden of that kind, what are some healthy and easy things to grow right on our balconies?
Good question. And Quantes, that's something that's near and dear to your heart, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is. Immediately, I started smiling because when I first started my journey, I still live in an apartment, but I lived in an apartment at the time. And honestly, herbs were, for me, the best thing. Not only because they don't take up that much space, but you could also grow them indoor if you have like a nice sunny area in your kitchen and you create this really nice little kitchen moment where you're just like grabbing mint from your windowsill or your counter or your rosemary. But they also don't take up a lot of space on your balcony either. If you want to get a little bit more adventurous, you could also do tomatoes. I've done that before as well. Tomatoes do good in the in containers. I would say the only thing though, if your patio is like accessible to animals, you're going to want to think about a way to protect them from, rabbits and things like that, because I've lost a lot of food because of rabbits and raccoons. And it just got to a point, there was one summer when I started growing vegetables on my patio where I was just like, you know, at this point, I'm just growing food for the animals. Like, just consider me Snow White. I'm just doing this for you guys. I don't even want to eat this stuff. So, but yeah, I would say herbs, especially if you're new, they're a little bit more forgiving. And they're also easy to use in a lot of different dishes too. So.
Yeah. And there are patio tomatoes. I mean, there's a tomato called patio and there's a reason for it. And you can have a pot with a patio tomato in it. There's nothing better than just go out and grab a couple and pop them into your mouth.
Yep.
But and herbs, I like the idea. Go ahead, Ben.
Say for this season of Let's Grow Stuff too, we sort of have a invisible third contributor this year as well, Sigrid Peterson. She is also a balcony gardener this year, new gardener as well. Last year was her, I think, first season, sort of digging in. And so she will be doing blog posts with us as well. So she won't be appearing in any episodes, but her blog posts sort of throughout the year is following her journey of, again, it's a small second story, patio with a little brick wall or stone wall. And so if you follow the Let's Grow Stuff blog, that'll be another, good, I think you'll just sort of learn again together with her as well through that.
There you go, Shanette. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, let's go to Mary in Stevens Point. Hi, Mary.
Hello. First of all, I have a comment for Alex, who called in about his raised bed garden.
Yeah.
If he would Google square foot gardening, it's quite a movement, and he'd get a lot of answers to many of his questions. And secondly, I got very excited about Troy Gardens a few years ago when I heard it was a co-housing project along with expansive growing space. And so I'd like either one of your guests to comment a little bit on how the two work together. Thank you.
Ah, good points. Quantes, go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, so from my knowledge and my experience of working on the land, the co-housing, when it first started off, it was just the co-housing. And then throughout the years, it developed into the farm and then the community gardens. As of currently, the co-housing is not necessarily a part of that operation, but it is on the same land. So a lot of the individuals who live in that co-housing are friends of the farm. They're often people who have become shareholders with the our food shares. And actually our farm manager, Paul Huber, if you're listening, hey, Paul, he actually lives in the co-housing as well. So we have a very strong relationship with those who live in the co-housing. But to my knowledge, it's not a part of the operation anymore. Right now, the farm and the gardens are under rooted incorporated.
And with the co-housing, I think at the time, if I'm trying to remember this, but you did not purchase the land, but you could purchase a house.
Right.
That was on the land. And that was a way to be able to afford. I mean, if you're not paying for the land, you're paying for the house, then it was easier financially to get yourself going in a home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful area. There's like, there is a little space of the land that's like dedicated to the co-housing. And there, you know, some beautiful trees that, you know, that are around. A lot of the people who live there are gardeners with us. It's very beautiful. And if any of you who are listening are ever in Madison or live in Madison, you should definitely come and visit. It's gorgeous.
And Mary's comment about square foot gardening is, she's right. I think our earlier caller and anyone could probably take a lot from that material on square foot gardening. So, Mary, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call for sure. Well, Ben, tell us about you've got a landscape portion of your business, too. You create a lot of lawn alternatives. And
yeah,
talk about why that's important to you.
Well, this is something that's sort of, again, also been one of my missions lately, but something we sort of brought into what botany is right now. But essentially, you know, we're not a landscape crew that'll do, you know, patios and decks or, you know, any of that. It's, we really focus on the plantings, plants themselves, plant relationships, plant communities, with the idea specifically of sort of replacing conventional lawns with something better. And by something better, I mean, you know, lower input, lower maintenance, again, pollinator support, wildlife support, and also things, of course, that work and look good in urban settings in particular. You know, a lot of times if you have a small city lot, it's more work just to get the mower out of the garage than it is, you know, just that in and of itself is a task and a job that can be laborious, you know. And, you know, when I speak about this, you know, I kind of equate it to thinking about, you know, certainly it is nice to say this is great for wildlife, but really it's the same premise as putting solar panels on your house or insulating your attic. It's a sustainability improvement. It'll save time, money, energy, you know, and we essentially work like, you know, we have different sort of planting treatments. So think of it like redoing the flooring in your house. Do you want hardwood? Do you want tile? Do you want carpet? And so we have those different planting treatments, different looks, different feels, different levels of input. That can sort of be matched up with what people want and where they are at. Mm-hmm. But I think this is sort of another, you know, we talked about trends earlier on that people are reevaluating their lives post-pandemic. How are we spending our time? How are we spending our money? More people are at home and they want to beautify their own spaces. But they're also realizing that, you know, wow, spending 2 hours a week just to mow grass and then multiply that by, you know, 8-9 months of the growing season times fertilizer times irrigation times, you know, like environmental impact aside, just looking at the time and money, I think people are crunching those numbers and realizing that there's a lot to be gained. And so I'm not interested in creating products that we have to come, you know, something that's so complex that we have to come back and, you know, you have to hire us to maintain it. No, we are just sort of here to help you make the flip essentially to get the plants, better plants in, the new design in. And then we sort of coach from there. So we want people to be active and engaged participants in their spaces. And we sort of, you know, nurture and coach them from there. But, you know, we're not looking for a ton of clients to come back and weed for them every week. And these designs shouldn't. So, yeah.
Ruth in Altoona has something that relates right to this. Ruth, hi.
Yeah. Yes, I am looking for a lawn alternative. My husband and I put in a rain garden quite a number of years ago, and then we redid our boulevard so that there's no grass in them. But I have this area, southern part of the property. It's gotten infiltrated with quack grass.
Looking for an alternative.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's an alternative, Ben?
So if you're looking for something that is still sort of grass-like or turf-like, and when I say turf, I mean, you know, things that can take some wear and tear. So if you have kids, dogs, whatever, if there's going to be action happening in that space, and you just need it to sort of be lower input, Prairie Nursery in Wisconsin, again, I think they were had a promo at the head of the show even. You know, they have a mix called Alomo Fescue, and that is a beautiful, beautiful mixture. Really, I mean, it's a cool season mixture. So it'll do most of its growing in spring. And then after you give it its first haircut, probably in May, you might have to mow it two or three more times. So that's a great, and again, it doesn't need the water or fertilizer that a traditional lawn will, but it'll still have the look and feel of traditional turf without all the inputs. If you're looking for something that's more garden-like, so less lawn, but more garden-like, I would really encourage checking out Roy Diblick's book, The No Maintenance Perennial Garden, and that's spelled K-N-O-W, not N-O. Roy Diblick, of course, is also based, he's a wonderful Wisconsin plantsman based in Burlington, Wisconsin, near sort of the southwest tip, almost before you hit Illinois. And it's very, very much worth a trip to go check out his space, see what he, how he gardens, how he thinks about plant communities and plant relationships. Of course, Olbrich Botanical Gardens and Allen Centennial in Madison as well, worth a visit, worth a trip. But any of these places are great to check out.
And Ruth, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, visiting with the hosts of PBS Wisconsin show, Let's Grow Stuff, Quantes Winters and Ben Fuda, our guests today for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Our guests today are the hosts of PBS Wisconsin show Let's Grow Stuff, Ben Fuda and Quantes Winters. Ben's the CEO and founder of the business Botany in South Bend, Indiana. Quantes is an urban gardener and an herbalist. She works to create space for diverse communities in the world of growing food growing through education and accessibility. So, what gardening questions are on your mind? Have you tried any new gardening methods in the last year or two? How did they work? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Roxanne in Germantown, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I had a question about no-mow alternatives.
Okay.
Can you recommend something for clay soil in partial shade?
And by partial shade, is it shady all day? Is it?
No, I mean, it's a south-facing area, but there are some trees.
Okay.
It does get several hours of sun.
Okay.
So my favorite go-to for shady spots and with clay as well are sedges. So sedges are very visually at first glance look may as well be a grass, but you know, sort of genetically and how they're classified are very different. What makes sedges unique is that many, there's hundreds of them out there really. They're native, first of all, but they are adapted to shadier and often wetter conditions that you might find with clay. Again, prairie nursery would be a really good option, especially for us here in Wisconsin to check out. You can sort of do a search on their website to sort of plug in your site conditions, that part sun and the clay soil, and they'll spit out and say, okay, here are the four or five varieties that would work well for those conditions. Depending on the space you have to cover, you could try actually buying starter plugs or smaller plants. But if it's a really, really large space, you know, maybe doing it by, sort of direct sowing seed might also be an option for you as well. But I would definitely look towards sedges more so than quote unquote grasses per se.
Yeah. And you're not going to be mowing them.
Exactly. No mowing. Yep.
Yeah. No mowing at all there. Roxanne, thank you for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Louis in Oconto, we'll go to you now. Hi, Louis.
Hello. Just a quick comment here promoting No Mow May. Great thing to do. But now my question is this. I have a riverbank, and I did lose a tree along. It got sheared off in the ice breakup, and I was looking to have some kind of ground cover to help hold that soil in. It's a mixture of rock, kind of like a riprap, but I have some grasses that are growing there, but this section's about 10 feet long or so. It's kind of a sandy soil. Looking for something to help protect the riverbank from erosion.
And is this area, even though it's sandy soil, is it consistently wet or saturated with the riverbank, or only if the river were to rise? Does it stay mostly dry most of the time?
Mostly dry, unless we have high waters and it'll come up for a while, but then it goes right back down. And so I was thinking some kind of plant with a long root system might stabilize it, but wanted to have your opinion.
Yeah, so I would actually give the same advice as we did to the last caller, and that's to look at sedges. So they are well adapted to shade, but there's also many that are well adapted to full sun, but also, again, that sort of intermittent or high moisture moments, but also can tolerate some drying out. They're basically sort of wetland edge species. And again, they can be submerged at times. The one that comes to mind offhand is, it's a mouthful of a word, but Vulpinoides, Carex vulpinoides, it's fox sedge. That one is a really great sort of wetland edge one. It's extremely graceful and elegant and beautiful, sort of a wonderful vase shape. And I've grown this one before, and I tried to dig it up to divide it once, and the root ball, I mean, it rivaled a tree, you know, when I dug it up in terms of the volume and the mass of the roots, lots of little tiny fibrous roots. So that could be one to try. But again, I think sedges might actually be a good selection for you, again, because they could take some of those varying conditions depending on what the water level is doing.
And was that fox sedge? Is that what you were saying, Ben?
Yeah, fox sedge. Yeah.
Fox sedge. Louis, I'd give that a try too. I think you're on the right track there with Ben's advice. Thank you very much for calling. Alina emailed. She'd like to know how to get started with growing food. She doesn't have a lot of outdoor space, just a small balcony, and would like to know if it's even possible. It's similar, I think, Quantis, to an earlier call. So go ahead.
Yeah, I would say for individuals who don't really have a lot of space to like grow in ground, and you're kind of just focusing on patio growing, don't be afraid to get creative. Typically, what I have noticed in my experience is that we have a little bit more room than what we think that we have. If we just, you know, like take a look and do a little bit of inventory of our space and what materials that we have. So I actually have a friend of mine, and what we did for growing on her patio is that we created like this, I forget the name of those. They're like, you know, like in, like at Home Depot, the wooden plank things that they use to pick up heavy stuff. I'm forgetting the name of them.
Skids?
They're like wooden and you can like flip them up and do a lot of different things with them. So what we did was we like flipped it up so it was vertical, and then put this like a base underneath each of the planks. And then we put dirt into those and made like this vertical herb garden. So, and she didn't have any room that was on the ground, so we just created something that could be used vertically on her space. Also, container gardening is going to be your friend if you are growing on your patio. So definitely do a little bit more research into that. You can grow in a lot of different things from my experience, as long as you have that drainage going on. I have even grown things inside of old dresser drawers, drilled a couple of holes in there, filled it with dirt. I would say be careful though, because all the moisture, eventually the wood did just like collapse. So think about that. But yeah, container gardening, and then just being a little bit more creative with, you know, how you're deciding to grow, like doing things maybe a little bit more vertically as well.
Sue emailed to ask if she can grow in straw bales against the south side of her house, or would it be too hot? I can say from experience that I have straw bales growing on the south side of my house. I don't know where she lives, but I'm in Madison, and I have no problems at all with the straw bales on the south side of my house, and they have, and there are no trees there either, so it gets a lot of sun. And the straw pretty much takes care of it for you. It's a good medium to grow plants, tomatoes and so forth. So don't worry about that. I think there could be other things to worry about, I suppose, but that wouldn't be one of them. Margaret in Mosinee emailed. She's a 75-year-old widow who wants to continue gardening. Do you have any suggestions for beginning some raised beds with her fenced existing yard? She wants to start small with without a lot of expense, and she doesn't have any help. So, and she's 75, you know. So she's looking for any suggestions, she said, would be much appreciated.
I mean, one suggestion that I could give her is start with things that are easier to grow and don't take a lot of care. So in my experience, kale, collards, and lettuce were really easy for me to take care of. So maybe focus on things like that that are not going to be so laborious for you, and you won't have to do like a lot of bending when it comes to weeding and things like that. I would also suggest you focus on growing things that you also really like too, because you want this to be enjoyable for you. I wish that I could talk to you, ma'am, so that I could, you know, hear a little bit more about what your goals were for growing. But because you don't have a lot of help, you're going to want to make sure that this is an enjoyable experience and doesn't feel like a chore. I know that when I started to grow, I kind of did more. I bit off more than what I could chew. And towards a certain point, it started to feel like I needed to force myself to get to my garden so that I can continue to take care of it. So I would suggest, you know, doing things that are going to be easy to take care of, and then growing things that you actually really like, so that your process can be filled with like wonder and awe of this natural process. And best of luck to you, ma'am. I wish I could come help you. If you live in Madison, I'll help you.
Well, she's in Mosinee, so she's a bit away from and a raised bed would be a good idea, because
you don't have to bend so much.
And so I like that a lot. Well, let's see. We had some other questions. One thing before we go back to other questions, by the way, there's still time. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your own questions. But previous caller mentioned no-mow May to help provide food for pollinators. And comments from either of you on that? Ben, you want to say something?
Yeah, so no-mow May, I first discovered it, I think it was spring of 2020. And when I was still at the Allen Centennial Garden, we sort of used the fact that everything was shut down to say, okay, let's stop mowing and see what happens. And, you know, of course, because the lawns were, you know, maintained organically, you know, we didn't have a lot of, we had a lot of clover, but of course that didn't kick in until later into the season, past sort of that no-mow period. You know, the no-mow period is great for things like violets, dandelions, other sort of spring flowering things to sort of, again, get up, have a full flowering life cycle, again, support pollinators before your regular mowing starts to happen. I think my cautionary tale is if you, you know, you can have an organic lawn that you still fertilize, you know, like those two are not mutually exclusive. And if you do fertilize, just remember that your lawn's gonna get really tall. And so when we actually came time to cut it, it was basically like baling hay. Even though we'd set the mower on the highest setting, it was a struggle for a couple days to sort of get it reined back in. But I can say, you know, it does, you know, if you do participate, just know that when you do the first mowing, the grass is going to pout for a little bit, but it's going to come right back and it's going to be fine. So, you know, immediately it might turn brown, it might get a little stubby, but as soon as you do that first mow through, again, within a week or two, it'll green back up and be just like it normally is every year. But if nothing else, even if you don't have a lot of flowering plants laced into your lawn, you're saving the time, you're saving the fossil fuel emissions, you're saving water. You know, May is usually a time of year when we have plenty of precipitation. You don't have to drag out the hoses or turn irrigation systems on, you know, so it's a good time to just sort of practice doing less. Plus, I love the alliteration of Nomo May. So those would be my sort of thoughts of, you know, if it looks like things are just getting too long for your mower to handle, we were at the point where when we did start to mow, we waited an entire day for it to dry out. But because it was so tall and so thick and dense, when you got down to where the mower was, it was still sopping wet. And so it would clog the mower and we'd have to start it every 10 seconds. It was just a lot. Check yourself in your lawn and how you're managing it now, and be mindful. I think if you're mindful of those things, I think it's a phenomenal initiative, and I'd love to have it be a bigger thing. So,
and back to what you were talking about earlier in terms of getting rid of some of your lawn. You know, when we moved into our house on the east side of Madison, it was about 10 years ago. The first thing I did was get rid of the lawn in the front of the house, because it would have been a real pain anyway. And plus, I thought it'll be a lot prettier with flowers. So with some native plants. So the space between the sidewalk and the street is sort of mostly native plants. And then closer to the house, then there are some hostas and some daylilies and some other things. It's really quite beautiful. And I have never put a mower to the front of the house. And part of the reason I want to bring that up is now it's looking, you know, it's the season's of winter's almost over. And those plants that were still up and not cleaned out held a lot of winter interest. And I know for a lot of people, it's really eager to get out there and clean that all out. But there again, for our insects, wait till you get about 3 days in a row of 50 degrees, because there are a lot of insects that are overwintering in those areas. And you're both nodding in agreement on that. And so I resist the urge to get out there and clean that area out until I've had some warm days.
It definitely takes discipline. And what I like to say too is, like, look at what nature's doing. There's nothing in nature that cleans out a garden, air quotes, you know, either in fall or spring. It's, you know, snow and rain knocks things down, knocks them to the ground, but the stems are intact. It doesn't get, you know, certainly you can. I've mowed down gardens in the spring before, again, after we're through that warmer period. But you could also just go out with hedge pruners or just hand pruners. But the idea that you have to take everything down to the soil and rake everything clean and tidy, that's a very us thing. That's not a nature thing. That's a very sort of counterintuitive to how the world behaves. So when I quote unquote clean up my garden, I just cut back the stalks and lay them right down on the ground. I just leave them in place.
Good. Very good advice. Jeff in Delafield, what's on your mind?
I've always been a proponent of natural, native, perennial landscapes as opposed to mowing. But the problem I've always had is I can't control the weeds, so it ends up being a maintenance nightmare for me. Are there any solutions for that?
Some of that comes on the front end, doesn't it, Ben?
Yes, definitely on the front end in terms of the initial planting and design. And so one thing to keep in mind for really all gardening, but especially this type of gardening, is that no plant evolved to grow in bark mulch. Let that sink in. Bark mulch is a very foreign thing to most perennial herbaceous plants. You know, go to any prairie or woodland, bark mulch doesn't exist. And so when we do a plant here and a plant over there, and there's a sea of bark mulch in between, that's a really foreign system to most. And, you know, the bark mulch will smother those weeds for a little while. But ultimately, again, life happens, time happens, we fall behind. And when we have weeds in our garden, sort of, I think of them as nature's first responders. So their job is to stabilize what nature sees as a damaged system or a system that has been impacted You know, weeds, essentially, their role is to prevent soil erosion. So they grow quickly, they grow fast, and they allow more complex and more longer-lived plants to return. So if you have weeds in your garden, sort of the, and you know, the advice that I'm like, what gardener wouldn't want to hear this is plant more plants, plant more desirable plants. You know, plants are meant to grow through each other and in each other. They're social. They're just like us. They want to lean on others. They want to occupy different levels. So don't think about necessarily, again, plant over here and a plant 3 feet away with a sea of mulch in between. Really just pack it full with those desirable plants. And that, bark mulch is acceptable, or I use it sort of as an establishment tool. So after planting a new garden, just to keep weeds down. But really by year two and three, those perennials should be up and tight and together, and they should create their own green mulch. So we're not bringing in artificial mulch at any point. And that should, in those circumstances, you might have one weeding in the spring, like May or June. But by June, again, you should have full and total ground coverage, and you just sort of sit back and enjoy the show from that point.
You know, and it's interesting. You know, I did a WPR tour to England, for example, and the gardens there are all packed, tightly packed, just as you've described it. And so, the weeding, there just isn't any weeding going on.
Yeah, the irony of how we garden in America is sort of we're almost creating more work for ourselves because of how we've culturally sort of been indoctrinated to say this is how we garden just because we said so and because mulch is seen as something that is attractive and desirable. But ecologically and naturally speaking, there's absolutely very little precedent for doing it the way we've done it. So again, I look to those natural ecosystems and how they're behaving. And again, for most gardeners, we all have that compulsive plant acquisition disorder where we go to a nursery and walk away with 20 more things than we'd plan to buy. And so good news, just keep planting,
Just keep planting. Absolutely. Well, I want to go back on our last minute or so here to your PBS Wisconsin show, Let's Grow Stuff. What have you got coming up for the show?
Well, for myself, Quantice and I are sort of taking different, we're all going in the same direction, but we're taking different lanes. My lane this year is actually really going to focus on, basically what we've talked about today. So these alternative lawns, lawn substitutes, sort of gardening ecologically, and then Quantice.
Yeah. So like Ben was saying, I'm going to be focusing on the food aspect of gardening and how to grow your own vegetables and things like that. So you can look forward to learning more about companion planting, which I told you about more, specific type of harvesting methods, as well as pruning methods as well, and how pruning is actually beneficial to your garden and not something that is going to take away from your garden. So I'm excited to talk about that a little more.
And the site to go to, and these are nice short very visual pieces on how to do things. And where do we go again? We go to
pbswisconsin.org/let's grow stuff.
pbswisconsin.org/let's grow stuff. Quantice, Ben, a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And so do our listeners. Thank you so much. Well, Quantice Winters and Ben Fuda, the co-hosts of Let's Grow Stuff. I hope you take a look there. Those are some great videos. Man, great videos. Certified personal property appraiser Shirley Bauman's back on Monday to answer your questions about antiques and collectibles. Hope you can join us for that. And hey, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mailer.